And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, you told me that this week reminded you of one word, bananas. What did you mean?
That's the metaphor, besides all the crazy stuff that's going on. There was a hearing in Congress this week. Congresswoman Madeline Dean from Pennsylvania, someone my daughter's been with a few times, who had Secretary of Commerce Lutnick in front of her talking about the tariffs and asking about food prices and what have you. And she was able to drag out of him that on certain goods, under just normal circumstances, there's going to be a 10% tariff on things brought into the United States or food sources. And she replied to him, well, Walmart has already, I think it was Walmart, already raised the price of bananas by 8%. So if you have a 10% tariff, they're eating 2% of it, but the consumer is going to pay more. And at the end of what she said, her time had expired, but Lutnick decided to be a smart aleck, and he asked the chairman of the subcommittee if he could have a moment to add something, and you know, he did, and he said, you know, there will be no tariffs once we bring all the manufacturing back to the United States. So we don't have, and that's the intent of what Donald Trump wants to do. He wants to bring the manufacturing and jobs back. Now, don't forget that Lutnick once also noted that when the jobs come back, it's going to be done by robots, but besides that point. But when he said, we're going to bring production back to the United States, Madeline Dean pounced and held up a banana and says, we don't make bananas in the United States. Right. What are you going to do about that?
Right. Exactly.
And so that became the metaphor for their conflating things and their ideology not being attached to reality.
Well, the plan of rolling back industrialization 150 years to the way industrialization was when it was first getting off the ground is insane. It's bananas. Life doesn't work that way. When industrialization started, the workday was 10 to 12 hours. There was a movement to make the workday 8 hours. That movement continued for 40 years before 8 hours became the standard. Is anybody prepared to go back to working 12 hours? I don't think so. I don't think so. We had child labor. We can go see pictures about the child laborers in Scranton if we go to the coal museum, the Anthracite Museum, and we can see 8 and 10 year olds who were, what were they called? Breaker boys.
Breaker boys.
And anybody out there want to send his 10-year-old boy to work in a factory? My father went to work at the age of 11. That was in 1901 or 1902. I don't think my father had in mind that I should go to work in a factory at 11. That's not happening.
Well, don't forget, though, that in some GOP states, they've lowered the age of allowing kids to work.
They have. That's right.
To what, 14 or 12 or something like that?
14, that's right. In West Virginia, one of the politicians said that this is good for character. Well, that is exactly what the robber baron said. This is good for character. Mike Johnson says you shouldn't have any kind of social safety net. He said that because it's bad for your character to be dependent on the government. That is precisely what the Jay Goulds of the world said in the 1880s.
Remember that famous quote by the head of the Pennsylvania Railroad about the coal strike and all of that? These folks think that at the top of the pyramid that their God-given right is to exploit the people below, and that it's good for the people below to be exploited.
That's precisely correct, and that's an abiding belief that they really all have today.
The tech bros are in that category as well.
That's exactly right. Peter Thiel's Peter Thiel, who is Vance's, you know, guru and the great organizer.
Sponsor,
yeah. Yeah, and the organizer of much of this right-wing stuff, this libertarian, this right-wing anarchism, tells you outright that the people who are poor don't have the brains to take care of themselves. They have to be led by the rich. Being rich is a sign that you're a better person, morally and intellectually. There are categories of humans. Some are subhuman humans, and those subhuman humans can't rule. They can't be trusted to rule. They have to be ruled by the Musks, the Teals, and the other superior human beings. And that's why Musk has to have 15 kids or 30 kids or however many kids. We don't know how many kids. It's a service he's doing to humanity by impregnating as many women as he can.
Passing on his genes.
Yeah, passing on his genes.
We're back to eugenics again.
That's exactly right.
And these folks are just, this idea that people cannot even rise above their quote unquote class in life. So we have to keep them down in order to have them have the bare minimums to survive. I mean, it's essentially that's all that they want to have. And they want to, you know, they want all the money, not just some of the money. They want all of the money, and that's why you have this dogged refusal to raise taxes on the upper 1% or on the hedge funds or anything like this. That I see this. They're talking about this quote unquote big beautiful bill, which, by the way, Musk has called on to kill the bill, but and we can get into that. But they I've heard congressmen defending this, saying, well, this is going to be great for the middle class and for the lower class. We're giving them tax breaks, which are really, the analysis is that A, the tax breaks that are given are small, and B, some of the tax breaks some of the effects of the bill will actually increase the costs of people down in the lower parts of the economic spectrum. But no one ever challenges them and said, well, why do we have to give, if you want to give this to, want to give tax breaks to the middle class or to the lower class, why do you have to give tax breaks to the upper class? Why do they need, 40% breaks or whatever they are, especially in light of the deficit that it creates?
I'll tell you why. Because according to the ideology of these right-wing libertarians, these right-wing anarchists, everybody has to be treated equally as an individual. You can't have specially favored groups, specially favored classes. If you gave a tax break only to the poor, or if you gave social benefits only to the poor without giving a commensurate amount to the rich, that would be discriminatory, and that's against the American way. That's how they get around it. And therefore, if you accept that, you're locked in.
Yeah, it's anti-progressivism.
It is. Yeah, it's anti-progressive taxation. You're back to 1890.
You're back to, remember when we started this show, I used to talk about the regressives.
Yeah. Well, that's what they want to be.
They want to regress back, like you said, to the 1890s or the 1910s or whatever.
Before the actual emergence of the Industrial Revolution, before the consolidation of the investors as the leading element of the capitalist system, that's what they want. That's what they're looking at. That's what they're holding out as the America that they want to recreate. But of course, they're split, right? As we saw this week, you've got Trump on one hand, you got Musk somewhere, and you've got Bannon somewhere. They're all part of the same movement, but they're at war with each other.
You know, I was thinking of the as an alternate theme rather than bananas. the shootout scene from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. But what I, you know, with the three main characters going after one another and none of them really knowing which, you know, who to go after first or how it was going to work out. But then I realized that there's no good there.
There's no good there. That's right.
There's only bad and ugly.
Yeah.
But
it pays to point out that they do represent different tactical approaches.
Yes.
Bannon definitely has a different strategic approach, not merely a different tactical approach. Bannon is sort of the head of the brown shirt movement movement, like the brown shirts of the Nazi era, who emphasized the social safety net, the social democratic aspects of the Nazi movement. Bannon promotes tax the rich, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's what he's been talking about.
But that doesn't make Bannon a pro-working class guy. That just makes Bannon a guy who has who says if we can't corral and mobilize and control the working class, we can't succeed in what we want to do. Whereas Musk is completely oblivious to that. He didn't give a damn about that because for him, raised in apartheid South Africa, repression is everything. You don't need to do anything to mobilize the working class. But they both have the same end in mind.
Although Bannon talking about deporting Musk, you know, reminding us of his immigration status, so to speak.
And not only that, but that Musk actually lied in his papers because he came here as a student, didn't register, or didn't go to school, started a business. That is a deportable event. And that's a deportable event even if it's discovered 50 years after you did it. They're using that kind of thing to deport people right and left right now.
The other thing Bannon is to leverage the power of the government. He's talking about seizing Starlink, which is anti-capitalistic government. Remember, Harry Truman seized the steel mills,
right?
Type of thing. So we have Bannon shooting at Musk, but he's also shooting to some extent with the tax cuts at Trump. And Trump is shooting at Musk, threatening not to seize Starlink, but to end government contracts. You know, that's a consistency in Donald Trump's world, is contracts don't mean anything. They're only as good as I want to let them happen, you know. You have to work, you have to perform your part of the contract, but I never have to perform mine, or I can cut it off once I get the benefit of what you've done. And that's what we hear that in his international relations the same way. It's a one-way street with him consistently. And of course, Musk is now shooting back at Trump and saying he should be impeached.
In fact, Musk called for organizing a new political party, which he wants to call the America Party.
Yeah, and that's going to be interesting because of the money that Musk can put behind this. Although Musk, I don't know how highly leveraged he is. He lost a lot of money this week in the value of Tesla. It went down 14% one day. It came back a little bit.
Came back up 4%.
Yeah. It came up 4%, but and he does have a compliant board of directors. You know, a board of directors doing what they're supposed to do would have told Musk, "You get out of the politics or get out of the company, because you're hurting us." But that's not what's going to happen. I mean, this was the board that acquiesced in giving him a huge payout.
They offered him $1 billion a week. Yeah. $1 billion a week. A week. A billion.
You wonder what are you going to do with $1 billion? You know, meanwhile, waiting to see, you know, Musk says he's wants to get out of politics. Well, I mean, he got burned pretty badly in Wisconsin on the Supreme Court race there. We do have Supreme Court retention elections here in Pennsylvania that I keep talking about, although I haven't seen or Musk doing anything about that right now. And I'm wondering, because Pennsylvania has its own billionaire to carry the ball there, Jeffrey Yaz, but I'm wondering if Yaz is going to start feeling being that upfront about money in politics is a good idea.
But I don't think Musk proposes to get out of politics. He, after all, he's active in politics in France, in England, in Hungary. He's active in the Czech Republic. He's active in Poland. He's active in many places.
By the way, Poland just reelected its conservative party, the Law and Justice Party.
To the presidency.
By a razor-thin margin.
Less than 1%, something like 8-tenths of 1%, right.
Yeah, but it's still there. So
right. I don't think you could figure that Musk is getting out of politics. He may, because he's involved in politics throughout the world. And he's not stepping back from Nigel Farage in England or Marine Le Pen in France or whoever he's backing in Italy, but he continues to back them. And he's got the money to do it, and he's doing it. You have a fascist international that exists. It's coordinated. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's coordinated. CPAC has conferences in all of these countries. They just had one in Hungary. Who spoke? Orbán spoke, the Prime Minister of Hungary, and Kristi Noem spoke, the Homeland Security Director from the United States. They cross-endorse candidates. They openly intervene in each other's in the politics of each country. They do exactly what they throw their hands up in shock and horror when the communists did it, organized an international movement. That's against sovereignty, but it's all right for them to do it. They do it, right?
Yeah. And they've had also have a technocracy, I guess you would call it, with the tech bros, Peter Thiel in particular, working things. But you wonder at what point is there going to be a falling out among them? I don't think
you can count on it. I mean, it's never good to make a strategic plan that depends on the other side falling apart. You have to push them apart. You have to force them out. Otherwise, you never have the initiative. You're always waiting for God to intervene and do something. And guess what? God's on both sides.
I thought it was only on Trump's side. But anyway, that's my rule number four, don't forget. Always play offense.
That's right. And which brings us to the Democrats. Trump has remade this. David Brooks, who was most of his life an orthodox William F. Buckley type conservative, Buckley being the guy who organized the National Review and who really was the promoter and organizer of the movement conservatives. By the way,
there's been stuff coming out about his racism of late.
Yeah, that was he came from a racist family. He opposed the civil rights movement. He was a promoter of his second book was a promotion of Roy Cohen and Roy McCarthy.
Joe McCarthy.
This guy was a bad guy all the way across, but he was a very popular guy, and he is the founder of the movement that Musk and Bannon are the flag bearers for right now. That's the fact. Well, David Brooks grew up in that movement, got his start in that movement, but published a very interesting article in the New York Times where he's worked now for 20 years as a conservative opinion columnist, in which he says, listen, Trump has revolutionized American politics. He's completely revolutionized the Republican Party. It is no longer a conservative party. It now stands for libertarianism, protectionism, and racism. And the Democrats don't realize that they are in a different political environment, and the old Democratic Party cannot cope with it, and it has to be a different Democratic Party. And really, none of the existing Democratic Party leaders seem to understand or are capable of understanding what's required, how thoroughgoing the change is that is required on their part if they're going to cope with this situation. And he quotes a political scientist that says, if this is a revolution, Revolution changes the identity of all players. No political party is going to get out of the revolution the way they came into it. You can have Lenin after Kerensky. You cannot have Kerensky after Lenin. It's a totally different story. And
that's a great line about can't have Kerensky after Lenin.
Exactly. So the question is, so what's happening with the Democrats? I don't forget Lenin. I don't see anybody in the Democratic Party that even grasps what Brooke is saying, much less standing up to try to do something along those lines. The closest I see are AOC and Bernie. But they're not really calling for a Democratic Party that's radically different. What they're calling for is a expanded social welfare net. That's not what he's talking about. Expanded social welfare net is not the kind of far-reaching thinking that is going to attract the working class, which is what Bannon has figured out how to do.
Yeah. And the Republicans have figured out what to do. I want to get into that, but I just want to make one remark about Bill Buckley. When I was in college, I worked at the campus radio station, and Buckley came to campus to deliver a talk, and I got to meet him personally and interview him. And I have to say, of all the people that I interviewed, there were two that I found to be, when you're in the room and you're sitting right across from them and you're just talking on a one-to-one basis, the two that I found to be the most engaging and the most charismatic at that level were Bill Buckley and Gene McCarthy. Opposite right. ends of the political spectrum. Yeah. But Buckley had this charm about him that, you know, I think carried him a long way, even though many of his ideas there were repugnant. And, you know, he was one who also believed in classes, you know, that he didn't think that certain people should have the right to vote, uneducated people, black people, that kind of thing. But I want to get back to the Republicans because they...
No, you're making an important point. Bannon, Buckley, these people, they believe in the class analysis of society. They just turn it upside down. They support the minority class. They don't support the majority class. But they definitely believe that society is characterized by class division. Yeah. That's very important. No Democrat believes that. All Democrats are trained that that's not true. I don't think that they can organize a political movement in the face of the Buckleyites, the MAGAites, if they deny the class analysis of society. I just don't think it's possible.
Well, but what the Republican Party had been able to do in places was to get people to vote go against their own interests, their own, particularly their economic interests.
Right.
And we've talked about this ad nauseum, what's the matter with Kansas. But we see state like the reddest of states, West Virginia, which is so dependent on the federal government and the social safety net, on things that the Republicans are against and vote against continually. I mean, what happens in West
Virginia? But that's an important point. You see, the class analysis of society does not hold that economic interests are always or even necessarily the motivating cause for the actions and the passions of any given class. It only holds that at base, in the long run, ultimately, if you regard all the tendencies in society, everything that is present in the explanation for the ideological shifts and turns ultimately has to do with the economic structure of society. But it doesn't hold that there's a direct reductionist stream of thinking from making a living to your ideas about the world. Just the opposite. What it says is the way you confront the way a living is made, either as an investor or as a worker, structures your entire ideology. But it's your ideology that causes you to do what you do. The Republicans have adopted, the Trumpists have adopted that. And they've created an explanation and an ideology that is based on that insight. The Democrats deny it. They therefore are incapable of doing anything other than creating a pastiche, emphasizing this or emphasizing that, but always reductionist, never integrationist in terms of social environment. It's a very different thing.
Oh boy, pastiche would not be a word that works for the people of West Virginia.
No, I'm sure it wouldn't, but nonetheless, it explains what they do.
Yeah. But what they're doing in across the country and what they've been doing in Pennsylvania, and now it's out in the open, is registering new voters and getting people to switch parties. And as I mentioned to you before we went on the air, and you've heard me complain about this for a long time. I've seen this trend happening over and over again. But the Republican Party now has openly stated that they are going to turn Pennsylvania red from being a blue state. That was not that many years ago that Pennsylvania had over 900,000 voter advantage for the Democrats. And now it's down to less than 200,000, and it keeps changing. It keeps going in the wrong direction for the Democrats almost by the week, certainly by the month. And they're going to do it not just at the state level, but they're doing it by county by county. And they've given each county some sort of targets, but they've given each county guidance. And as I talked about, just prior to the election in November, the Republicans had a booth set up right outside the county government building to register people, and they were doing that. And since then, I've seen their booth set up right across the street from the county registration office, and they're still at it. And the numbers keep swinging. Luzerne County is a prime example. And the Democrats there that I talked to have no idea of what to do to reverse this. Lackawanna County, it's moving in that direction, but not as much. With the current county structure of the Democratic Party, the people who are in charge of it, it's not going to get any better. These folks aren't concentrated on it. They just don't. They're stuck in the old school of our job is to try to get patronage jobs for our friends and relatives, in essence, instead of being in any kind of a movement. The numbers are pretty stark and startling, but it's down at that level. But again, these are people that are registering against their own interest, when the you know what hits the fan, if this big beautiful bill gets finally passed in large parts of it, people start losing their health insurance. And they start losing their jobs and whatever, what's going to happen. But as you said to me, you can't wait for the other side to have a breakdown. You've got to be able to prepare yourself and push yourself to the forefront. You have to be for something that people will want to be for.
Exactly. And it remains to be seen whether the Democrats are the group that can do it.
These Democrats are the group that can do it.
Yeah.
We don't see a Teddy Roosevelt on the horizon. We don't see a Franklin Roosevelt on the horizon or Lyndon Johnson on the horizon. But you never know. Sometimes somewhere, sometime when you least expect it, as the saying goes. Something breaks or something comes out. But again, luck is usually the end product of design, not just on its own. So
and history doesn't work in election cycles. It takes a long time to organize effective movements that bring about the sudden emergence of the one who you didn't know about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll see if anybody emerges next week. And there's a rally next Saturday, no King's Day, so to speak.
It's rally in Scranton.
In Scranton, all over the country.
Yeah, but also Scranton. Also, yeah. By the way, also in Halstead in Susquehanna County.
Good, good. That's the day of Trump's big birthday parade as well.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right, well, see you next week, hopefully at a rally, not at a parade.
Okay, see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.